Across the Streams podcast is brought to you by the Cass Ione Foundation. We're looking forward to our second annual Cass Ione Foundation Golf Invitational taking place Saturday, July 13th at Prior Creek Golf Club. Following up on the heels of last year's sold-out success, we look forward to everyone joining us again on a great Saturday for a round of golf while enjoying everyone's company and raising money to battle Alzheimer's and dementia in all its forms. For more information, please visit us at CassIoneFoundation.org. In addition, Cross the Streams podcast is brought to you by Teams of Men. Teams of Men exist to enlighten coaches of male athletes to empower their players to the potential of a reimagined manhood. Visit us at teamsofmenllc.com to find out how our workshops, our course curriculums, our discussion prompts, and even our mantra t-shirt series can help you start meaningful conversations and dialogue about your players' humanity, your next team meeting, your next team practice, your next team road trip. teamsofmenllc.com. Cross the Streams podcast, season 8, episode 214 overall for the pod. Kip here. Excited for today. Dishing on the drive style length. So probably 15 to 20 minutes for everybody out there on your drive, your commute to work, your commute back to work, or if you got stuck and you guys forgot something at the grocery store you were supposed to get, this is the podcast for you to deep dive that. Today, coming up in our outline, I've got a story of a discussion between one of my longtime colleagues in coaching that I think applies to the framework or the vision or the philosophy you have as a coach in preparing your players for when they're no longer with you as in the program, but also probably has direct tie-ins and works for parents as well. We're gonna talk about the ways men have historically defined violence and why that's why so many women are never believed when they are harmed by men. And we're gonna take a deep dive into how adults can start the conversations, or maybe the ways and reasons adults aren't having conversations around consent, around sex, around different ways and methodologies we can use to make sure our kids are engaging and have skill sets that matter when it comes to sex, when it comes to preventing gender violence, sexual assault, etc. And then we're going to engage with a leadership tweet that I saw that was trending, that I think there's some solid foundational aspects of it, but also that I want to pick away at and have a little bit of a disagreement in. But that's the outline. That's what we're looking at for Cross the Stream, Season 8, Episode 214. All right, so to start with, I saw this. This is a favorite account of mine that I think if you're an educator out there, if you're a parent, if you're a coach, anyone that is forward-facing and dealing with young people in a setting often where you're in charge of dispelling, of encouraging or giving out wisdom and helping them learn. I think a great website is Edutopia, at E-D-U-T-O-P-I-A, Edutopia, and they put out a bunch of great materials, and they do it in bite-sized, actionable ways. Like, they'll release some major studies, but most of the time they're giving you static images and quotes, or they're giving you a listicle, so to speak, of, hey, do these five things to better challenge kids in the classroom that are losing focus. But the one that I saw that really got me down this rabbit hole of thinking and remembering a story of a conversation between a colleague of mine that I think is relevant to everybody was they put this up on February 21st of 2024, this year, and the quote from Edutopia was, "Our job is not to prepare students for something. Our job is to help students prepare themselves for anything." That's by AJ Giuliani, an educator. Once again, our job is not to prepare students for something. Our job is to help students prepare themselves for anything. And that got me thinking because, you know, and I'm obviously still a parent. Kelly and I have our three kids here, parents listening on the drive, or coaches listening on the drive. Because I think as you do the job of coaching or you go down this journey of parenting, and of course it applies to teachers as well, sometimes you're caught up in either the lesson plan or the chapter or the concept we're rolling out in class today. Or as a coach, you're worried about the install of this offensive game plan, this defensive game plan, or this particular skill development for this player on the court or the field. And as a parent, you're worried about this particular aspect of your kid's personality or something they're struggling with that you're trying to build up their skills in, right? And there's nothing, these are not inherently bad things at all. That's the role you take on as a coach, as a player, as a parent. You feel yourself tasked with helping the journey of a player of your kid. But I know I had a discussion with Paige Swadner, who was my colleague, the women's head basketball coach, still the women's head basketball coach at Willamette. We worked together for a decade plus. And we were talking one day, a year or two ago, and I think I was bringing up my concerns for one of my guys that was about to go out in the real world. One of my guys that was a senior and was having some late semester, last semester struggles, a little senioritis setting in, completing his degree and getting out in the real world. And we got to discussing and talking about ways and angst and stresses and anxieties you have as a coach as you're getting these kids ready at the college level to literally transition from a college athlete to an adult immediately in the real world. And Peg had a great quote that I want to give her full credit for, and I'll put it in the graphics too of this episode. And she said, "Kip, at the end of the day, I'm a mama bird, and I'm not kicking them out of the nest because I'm convinced they're ready to fly. I'm kicking them out of the nest because I'm convinced they can survive the fall." Let me say that again from Coach Peg Swadner. Just this last year, the Coach of the Year in the Northwest Conference got Willamette's women's team for the first time ever to the NCAA Division III National Tournament. Phenomenal coach, awesome friend. And she said, "Kip, at the end of the day, I'm a mama bird, and I'm not kicking them out of the nest because I'm convinced they can fly. I'm kicking them out of the nest because I know they can survive the fall." And I thought that was so powerful and relevant to this same quote from AJ Giuliani, where we're not ever going to be sure that the skill sets or the exact lesson plan, the exact concept that we rolled out is going to happen. Our players, our students, our kids are going to activate them in the exact way we would or the exact way we prepared them to do in this exact scenario. What we're really hoping for, and probably part of the teams of men framework that I use too with coaches, is you are giving them decision-making paradigms that you think they can build for themselves. You're helping them craft their own decision-making paradigms that will be applicable to any situation they face in the world, and you trust them to take it on by themselves. That at some point you are preparing them to no longer need you to lay out the roadmap, to no longer need you to call the play, or to no longer need you as the parent to apply rules or restrictions or mandate their behavior, because they've grown into an independent person, player, adult, that we got to sit back and witness. And I've talked about this too with coaches, that the goal of coaching, and I think this applies to Kip the dad as well and parents listening, the goal that you end up starting this job, this journey in any of those hats as a mandator of behavior. You set the rules, you set this, you say what's going to happen. And then if you do it right and you put your ego aside and you trust the methodologies you're using to grow their own independence in your players or your students or your kids, you should evolve from a mandator to a witness, purely a witness that can sit back and watch and sometimes not even need to watch because you trust that those people, those kids are ready to go live. They're ready to go play without you. You don't need to be a decision-making factor at all. You've helped them build a methodology, a mechanism that'll work for life. And that's all we can do in these roles. So big shout out to Peg for the birds flying, nest falling analogy. And once again, make sure you follow Edutopia at Edutopia on Twitter for more content just like this. Next up, let me give a content warning if you're listening, because we're going to dive into the world of gender violence prevention. And anytime we talk and discuss and platform gender violence prevention, we inevitably get to mentioning aspects and actions of gender violence that can be triggering. So if you're listening in your car and you're a survivor, a secondary survivor, you have young kids in the car, this might be a section you want to warn them about or prepare yourself for as we go. Now, this comes from another great follow that I think everybody should find, Dr. Charlotte Proudman, at Dr. Proudman, Proudman. She was the Advocate of the Year, Women in Law Awards 2023, Family Law, Cambridge Academic, founder of At Right to Equality. I found Dr. Proudman via my work with Teams of Men, so she's one of those people that I follow a ton. And she posted on February 10th this on X/Twitter. And it's I believe it's a screen grab from Women's Rights_News. And this, the reason I share this is because one of the biggest hurdles one of the biggest challenges I find, and I found in the Teams of Men work I did with my own players for a decade and the Teams of Men work I'm helping other coaches do across the country, is men are very often willing to say, yes, I don't want to do any of those awful things. Yes, those awful things are bad. But then when it comes to survivor advocacy, believing victims, men are very hesitant and often skeptical. As a matter of fact, a lot of the studies out, especially by It's On Us and Equimundo, will show that in surveys, men are less likely than ever to believe when one of their friends, teammates, associates, close friends, close loved ones are accused of causing harm to women. They're less likely to believe. There's not a lot of survivor advocacy. And in the sports world, it's like this circle the wagon mentality around our brotherhood. And because that's my teammate, quote unquote, my brother, I'm going to believe him over all the statistics. Let me remind everybody out there again that when it comes to false accusations, the percentage of false accusations throughout all the studies and all the research is, depending on which study you read, 2 to 7%. So if you're going to tell me that there are false accusations, I will have to agree with you and I will have to be willing to be wrong 7 out of 100 accusations where I believe the survivor. As long as you're willing to be wrong the 93 times that you believe the accused and I was right and the survivor was telling the truth. So that's the background. And I have to do this work in team rooms. And it's a big lift to get men to start unpacking false ideas, to start unpacking victim blaming. But I thought this was a great illustration, this share that Dr. Charlotte Proudman shared from Women's Rights News that's credited to a woman named Farida, F-A-R-I-D-A, at farida.d.author, I believe is the account directly responsible. And here's what it says, and I'll put this up on our socials as well. You know why women who are victims of men's violence aren't believed? Because what constitutes as violence is defined for us by men, not by women. He catcalled. That's just a compliment. She yelled. That's verbal violence. He groped. That's flattery. She punched him back. That's physical violence by her. He abused. That's out of protection. She called him out. That's defamatory violence. He raped. That's just bad sex. She's a feminist. That's man-hating, the worst violence. It really is that simple. The world doesn't believe women who are victims of men's violence and is eager to side with men because even our definition of violence is sexist. And if you're listening and you've got sons at home, if you're listening and you're a coach of male athletes, I want to go back through that real quick. First of all, have you discussed and talked and unpacked what catcalling is with your son, with your players? Okay. And have you forcefully told them, hey, you calling out nice ass, hey, gorgeous, all the things we hear from catcalling, that is not you being complimentary of a woman. That's a problem. It's harassment. They didn't get up this morning to walk down the street to parade around for you to yell inappropriate things out. Shut up. Okay. Groping, touching inappropriately. Have you had the safe zones discussion of what's appropriate touching for even young kids all the way through your players in college? Have you talked about these things? Okay. The discussion points, and I love this from, I respect the hell out of this because it is so true of what I've seen. Whenever we bring up these aspects of gender violence, whenever we bring up catcalling, inappropriate touching, sexual violence, we get the exhaustive list of excuses men make for each other and how the woman is misconstruing the actions. If you think about it, everyone, very rarely, let's just use famous celebrities and athletes accused of sexual violence. When was the last time one of those where you immediately decided to believe the athlete? When was the last time it came out that the athlete had never had sex with the person accusing them? You might get to the discussion, this is why consent training is so important. We get a lot of discussion of, she thought she wanted it. Oh, I thought that she was on board. We end up in all these consent, blurring of consent lines. But we never have these instances that men like to claim, well, women are just going around accusing men of raping them. But then it comes out that that man and that woman had never been in a bedroom together. That man and that woman had never existed in a scene together. That's almost never the case. It's always a discussion around consent. It's always a discussion of did we continue to want to be in this physical situation? And that's where so much of my frustration with people not believing survivors comes from, because we are rooted in exactly what Farida.D.author in Women's Rights News says. Men are defining and redefining and moving the bar of what violence against women is. That we need to stop. Next, I got another great follow for you. And I know everyone else is like, Kip, damn, are you getting paid for these sponsorships? I wish. We got to grow the podcast to that level. But I've got another great one for you. And this is Christopher Pepper at Mr. Health Teacher. And he's got a phenomenal Substack. He's got a newsletter. But Christopher Pepper is a must follow. He's a PE teacher, an educator that's been really, I've followed him for a couple years now. And he's awesome in trying to help in reimagining what manhood can look like for boys. And I think it's vital we do the work early, which I mentioned before in this podcast. Some of our work with middle school teams, I think, is even more impactful than when we get Power Five college teams, because middle school kids are sponges and they're absorbing and acting out on what they absorb constantly. So we need to let them absorb positivity and the potential of a healthy masculinity. Anyway, at Mr. Health Teacher, Christopher Pepper shared this study and broke down key findings from Making Caring Common at MCC Harvard ED. Making Caring Common helps educators, parents, and communities raise children who are caring, responsible to their communities, and committed to justice. Now, who can disagree with that? Like, there's no reason not to follow Making Caring Common. If their goal is to help educators, parents, and communities raise kids who give a damn, are responsible in their communities, are committed to justice. It's a great follow, so make sure you do that. Anyway, they put out a study, and the study's titled, I think this is helpful for parents out there, and once again, coaches, you fit into this category, which is part of the reason I do the work I do, is because I try to activate coaches to be more than a tactician. Your play call will not be remembered. How you make these kids feel, the life lessons you help them learn, will be remembered. Not your play call on third down, not your timeout draw. You won't even remember your timeout draw next week. The study from at MCC Harvard, the talk, how adults can promote young people's healthy relationships and prevent misogyny and sexual harassment. And I'm going to give you some of the key findings and why I think it's vital that you not only follow these people, but deep dive and activate yourself into some of this work. And when I'm giving presentations now with teams of men, I try to help coaches. I try to tell them that I want to embrace a CIA methodology in my presentation so they can be better at CIA in their practices every day. And what CIA is connection, impression, and activation. Can you find a connection point with your players? Can you leave an impression with your players? And can you activate them towards behavior change for the better on the field or off the field every day? And I know it's unrealistic to expect connection, impression, activation with every single player every single day. That's not realistic. But if you can get one of those, a connection, an impression, or an activation with each player every day, you and your staff, then you're doing a hell of a job. You should pat yourself on the back and get and go tell your boss you need a raise. But, so I'm going to give you some of these findings from the study. The talk, how adults can promote young people's healthy relationships and prevent misogyny and sexual harassment. Because one of these findings, and I think there's about 8 of them that Christopher Pepper put up on Twitter that I'm going to share with you from the study. One of them might be a connection point for you. It might cue a story or an experience in your head that makes you say, damn, you're right, that point is true. That exists in my life. 2, one of these might leave an impression. If you're like me, sometimes stats move you, analytics move you, and one of these stats might scare the shit out of you to the point you might change or go do something. And hopefully all of them activate you to start these discussions with your teenagers at home, with your teenagers in your team room. Key findings, teens and adults tend to greatly overestimate the size of the hookup culture. And because of this overestimation, these misconceptions, they're detrimental to young people. Large number of teens, this is 2, and young adults are unprepared for caring, lasting, romantic relationships and are anxious about developing them. And I don't think the anxious part is a negative. Like we all are, okay? Yet it appears that parents, educators, and other adults, and anytime you hear other adults in these findings, coaches, that means you, in my opinion. You are a quasi-parent, you're a quasi-educator, and you damn sure are another adult in young people's lives. But it appears that parents, educators, and other adults often provide young people with little or no guidance in developing these relationships. And the flip side of that, and something I speak about as well too, is the good news is that a high percentage of the young people in our lives want us to dive into these conversations. Coach, I know you feel awkward, Dad. I know you feel awkward, Mom. I know you feel awkward, Coach, talking about these things. Get over it. We need to engage these young people in these discussions about lasting relationships, about what a caring romantic relationship actually looks like, what it entails, what it doesn't. Because if we don't do the work, if we don't have these discussions, they will go online and they will find these discussions being had by sources and people you do not want influencing them. Number three in this study, misogyny and sexual harassment appear to be pervasive among young people. And certain forms of gender-based degradation may be increasing, yet a significant majority of parents do not appear to be talking about it. Dads, have you not told your kids to stop catcalling? Dads, have you not talked to your daughters about how they don't need to put up with catcalling? How a boy being rude and obnoxious to them is not, he's just flirting with me. Bullshit. Your daughter wasn't put on this earth for young men to figure life out on. Your daughter wasn't put on this earth for young men to be rude to while they try to figure out what respect looks like. Horseshit. She can demand more. And you should teach her that. Number five, research shows that rates of sexual assault among young people are high. But still, the research suggests from this study that a majority of parents and educators still aren't discussing with young people basic issues related to consent. So we're sitting back and we're terrified of consent and what might happen to our son or daughter out in the real world, but we refuse to talk about it. Make that make sense. You would never allow if your son or daughter came to you with, I don't understand, I know there's a test coming up, it's going to be really hard, I might not pass it. You would never tell them, well, let's just worry about it. Don't study. Let's not talk about it. Let's not do the work required to be prepared for it. Let's just be worried about it. We would never do that. But why are we settling for that when it comes to consent discussions? Okay, 70% of the 18 to 25-year-olds who responded to our survey reported wishing they'd receive more information from their parents about some emotional aspect of a romantic relationship. Once again, let me put it in bold. Let me highlight it. Let me put music to it so you pay attention, moms, dads, educators, and coaches. They want us to talk about these things. They want guidance. They want help. We're the ones staying silent. We're the ones afraid to stand in our own voice. And if we don't, they're going to continue to get these this messaging and how to behave in these situations erroneously from horrible sources. Andrew Tate and his like being one of those. 65% of the respondents of 18 to 25-year-olds wish they'd receive guidance on remote romantic relationships in a health or sex ed class at school. They want these things, but parents are opting their kids out. Okay, when you opt your kids out of school and education training on healthy relationships and sex, you're opting them in to finding out about this through their own trial and error, dangerous combination. Or let's be honest, everybody, if they're not having these conversations with you and people in their life and adults they trust, they're going to try to learn about it through pornography. And pornography is going to give them a horrendous idea of what relationships and sex are supposed to look like. But if you opt them out of these sessions with people they trust that are trained and educated on healthy versions of all the things that are going to come up in their life and their intimate relationships, you are opting them in to having to go find it in horrible situations. And then finally, and this goes back to maybe to our earlier segment on the pod, 87% of women reported having experienced at least one of the following during their lifetime. Being catcalled, 55% of women have been catcalled. Touched without permission, 41% of women have been touched without permission. Insulted with sexualized words, i.e. slut, bitch, hoe, by a man, 47%. Insulted with sexualized words by another woman. Having a stranger say something to them, 52%. And having a stranger tell them they were hot randomly, 61%. This is the world we live in. This is the world we inhabit. But it's also a world we can change. So that's why I'm imploring you, not just listen to our podcast, but if you're connected, if you're impressed, if the impression was left by these findings, or if you're activated to do something, go follow at Mr. Health Teacher. Go follow at MCC Harvard Ed, Making Caring Common. Read this study. And in the study are ways to have these discussions. If you're a coach and you're like, Kip, I have no idea how to do this. You've left an impression on me. I know I need to do it. I don't know what to do. That's what Teams of Men does. That's why they're a sponsor of Cross the Streams podcast, because we want to connect with coaches who need our help in our work. I've done the work. I've had the awkward conversations to the point I'm not intimidated by them anymore. I'll start the work for you, coach, with Teams of Men, and I will train you and your staff to get to the point where you can do it and I can leave because your players trust you. they'll have an impression from me for the first day I give a speech. I'll be funny enough, I'll do the work well enough that they'll have an impression. You'll have a platform and an opening. But then the work needs to come from you and your staff because they trust you. All right, last segment here, everybody. So this one is from Kevin DeShazo on X. And if you know Kevin DeShazo, you might have heard the name. He's a co-founder of Be Better Leaders, DeShazo, Kevin DeShazo, keynote speaker, consultant for top leaders, teams on leadership. So he's a voice online that I follow. I think there's some good stuff he puts out. Obviously, he's been doing this work successfully enough to build a platform and an audience. And one of the tweets he put out on February 25th, was a definition of leadership. And now listen, I recognize the importance of leadership, but I often think, and unfortunately, I think people are much more likely to listen to the term leadership than they are character development. And they're also much more likely to listen to the term character development than they are preventing gender violence. I can get coaches to engage with me when I tell them, yeah, we do a little bit of leadership training, when really all I'm trying to do is build a better human that won't touch people inappropriately, won't say things inappropriately. But those are awkwarder conversations, and sometimes leadership gets used as a sanitized version of entry point. And that's not a knock on anybody that does this leadership training, because it is vital. But sometimes I worry that we don't get into the real weeds. Like, where in your leadership, I just asked this question, where in your leadership training does it help prevent gender violence? And if you can answer that, then keep doing your leadership training. Fantastic. But if there's no answer to my leadership training helps my young men not commit or be victims of gender violence, if you can't answer that, then what's the leadership purpose for? Right? Often I think leadership sometimes gets conflated with how do we make people obedient to us, and we don't want that. But I think that Kevin DeShazo does have a great tweet here that I think 90% of this I agree with. And what he said was, what people think leadership is: power, authority, charisma, and achievement. And then he says, what leadership really is: empowerment, relational influence, humility, and helping others achieve. Be worth following. I think there's a lot of good there. Because I definitely think those that would abuse power often seek it, and unfortunately most often find it. So I don't think leadership is power. I don't think leadership is authority, and I don't think leadership can be measured purely by achievement, especially in coaching, wins and losses, etc. I do agree with leadership is empowering others. I do agree that leadership requires relational relationships that you can help somebody activate towards better. And I think it is obviously about helping others achieve more than they thought they could. And I think there's a great deal of humility. So all those are great. I think he's worth a follow to listen to. The only part that has put me in disagreements and discussions with coaches I respect that do a great job is what people think leadership is regarding charisma. And this is where we get into that discussion I think I might have mentioned last year, where coaches are like, I don't want to be their friend. So charisma being people drawn to me, and people want to be around me. And this particular tweet paints charisma as a negative. And I don't think it's a negative. I don't think we should cut off the parts of us that make us attractive to people wanting, not attractive physically, but I would like to be around that person. I am drawn to that person's energy, that person's the vibe they're putting out makes me want to be around and be a part of that person's life. I don't think that's a bad thing. I think there is a level of where we could actually weaponize charisma towards something and influence kids toward doing something wrong. We don't want to get into that. But I don't think charisma or friendliness or social skills that you have that make kids excited to see you every day is a negative thing. Once again, I don't think this tweet is saying that entirely. There's a lot of good parts of this tweet, but I don't think as leaders, as parents, as coaches, as educators, you can think that if I am a neutral, if I'm a robotic neutral, then I can actually engage with young people. And this is obviously, we're afraid, and rightfully so, that we don't want to cross the appropriate boundary lines. Absolutely. We co-sign that 100%, but I don't think the boundary line is before friendship. I don't think that's a problem. I think as a coach, there's ways you're not going to be friends with all your players. But I do think you should make sure they have access to the parts of your personality that are friendly, right? I think that's a thing. I don't think we can go through life trying not to make connections with people that we want to help activate towards better. So that's my only issue with this. I 100% co-sign empowerment, relational influence, humility, and helping others achieve is the true definition of a leader. This is why I push back so hard on the alpha male theory that I hear on podcasts and I hear on post-game breakdowns, that somebody went alpha, or that guy's an alpha, or they don't have a dog. Let me say this again, and I might say this all season. The alpha male theory, the author of that study has come out and said repeatedly, please stop using my study. I have a huge flaw in the way I went about the study. I recognize now that when I studied wolves and decided to post about there's an alpha male in the pack, that I was studying wolves unrelated to each other and existing in captivity. So I did not get the true measure of what a familial pack of wolves does and how they operate. Because when he did go study, when they did take a look at wolves in the wild, the alpha male was a caretaker. The alpha male nurtured wounds. The alpha male fed and helped everyone. The alpha male did not dominate and just go dog on everyone. Please stop saying alpha male. Please stop it. That's tyranny. That's demanding obedience. If you want to be a true alpha male, carry some Neosporin, some snacks, and be ready to nurture across the streams.